Let's say hello now to Dr. Matthew Jebb, Director of the National Botanic Gardens. We were talking about rain earlier, Matthew, with Richard and Niall, and how the birds are affected by rain and what they do in the rain. Is it good for you up there in the Botanic Gardens? Do you like to see the rain, Matthew?
Well, I know, Derek, it's often the case that we're not looking for just hot, dry weather. We're looking for a bit of sun and rain to keep those plants happy.
Matthew, let's start at the very beginning, as they say. So you're still open for business. Have you relaxed your restrictions in there? What's the situation at the National Botanic Gardens?
We have relaxed a little bit. For some months, we've kept the vegetable garden, the rockery, various sort of woodland paths closed because they were narrow and confined. But we've opened all those up now because we feel our visitors are responsible enough to know their limits, to know when they don't want to be in a crowded spot. So it's a chance really to show off the plants, because otherwise you're depriving people of all of that hard work we've done and in getting those plants to a lovely stage of the year.
Well, we're well and truly into spring, almost at the end of spring. We're knocking on the door of summer. So what plants have you got there?
Well, the plant of the moment, of course, is the may tree. The hawthorn trees are in full bloom up and down the country, and traditionally, this is the tree that signifies the beginning of the summer months, a tradition that the May tree signals the first day of the truly good weather, that a frost after the May tree has come out is incredibly unusual. So we can sort of rest comfortable now that the summer season is well underway, and the smell and the scale of the blossom of the hawthorn is a striking sight in every little roadway up and down the country.
And occasionally you see the lone standing hawthorn. There's one in the Phoenix Park near the old Armory's fort there, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, the folklore surrounding this tree is massive. It is no doubt that because of its indicator of the summer months, it has acquired folklore not only in Ireland but really right across the Atlantic seaboard of Europe. The thorn tree is regarded as a sacred tree. It's to do with the fairy realm, and people quite rightly choose to leave these lone trees alone. They're often associated with old wraths and so forth. Their spiky nature, the way they make excellent stock-proof fences, often associated with holy wells. And of course, we have the rag tree tradition that, you know, hanging little offerings on these trees goes back way before Christianity. It's something that represents the elder religions of Europe.
There's a fairy triad, if I'm not mistaken. If you have the ash, the oak and the hawthorn together, you're going to see fairies.
That's right. And the big thing about the thorn trees was that they represented that link, that because of that association, it is that the warrior fairies would relax or rest after battles, tending their wounds, and they often lay in the shade of the thorn tree, the may tree.
And is it true that people often would plant them in order to protect slow growers like the oak? Because I know the hawthorn is a fast grower for the first decade or so, isn't it?
This great surge of rewilding across Europe and an understanding of how does forest replace itself. You've got open grassland, and if you've got grazing animals, every little tree that tries to come up will usually get chomped into oblivion. But you get little thickets of thorns and spiny plants, and it's amongst them that the little baby oaks, the birches, the ash trees, they come up inside the protection of the thorns. And so they are part of an ecological cycle, if you like, that woodland can develop in the presence of grazing animals. That kind of mosaic of habitats across Europe is no doubt, you know, one of the founding reasons for a lot of our biodiversity, the mixture we have.
But it seems to me, and I've travelled quite a bit across Europe, that we have more hawthorns per square metre than any other country in Europe. Am I just imagining that?
They disappear in closed forests. Once a forest gets growing, a thorn tree is an early coloniser. It survives well as a hedgerow tree at the edge of forests. But once you've got big oaks and ash, alder, they shade it out and it disappears. So it represents a successional stage that is short-lived, really. And a lot of Europe has a great deal bigger forests than we do here in Ireland. And that's partly a reflection of the ecosystem here. We've got wet boglands that don't harbour big forests, but traditionally we also lost a lot of our forest during clearances over the last 400 or 500 years.
Richard.
Matthew, you raised so many interesting ideas there. I think we could thank the Congested District Board for the large number of hawthorns we have, because when the big estates were divided up, farmers were instructed to fence them off. And of course, the hawthorn is the plant for doing that. You can grow it quickly in a little nursery, and then you can set up all these fences and keep the cattle in. It's thorny, so the cattle won't get through it. It's good from livestock. You mention, however, mythology and so forth. It seems to me the hawthorn is a great fusion of pagan and Christian. Now, the place that comes to mind is Glastonbury, a place I visit occasionally because we have friends living not all that far away. Now, in Glastonbury, Joseph of Arimathea was supposed to have arrived there and stuck his staff into the ground, and it changed into a hawthorn. And the hawthorn blooms twice a year, in May and in December. Now, it was destroyed, the original tree was destroyed in the English Civil War, but they've planted successive ones, cuttings from the original. How is that possible, Matthew? You can't grow it from seed. Is this a kind of an Irish yew situation?
What happens with a lot of these strange mutations in plants, and an example might be the pendulous ash tree. A pendulous ash tree will bear lots of ripe seeds. You can sow them, but they'll all turn into ordinary upright ash trees because the genetic source of the error, if you like, in the plant disappears in the next generation. It gets suppressed. It's a recessive gene. In the case of this thorn tree that flowers twice a year, its name is variety biflorus, meaning it flowers twice a year. And that, again, is an extraordinary mutated form that will go from cuttings, go from graftings. But if you sow the seeds, you get the normal single flowering thorn tree. So it is it's a typical feature of certain mutations in plants that they won't transmit into the next generation. And if they do, it's usually fatal for the plant. If you have certain genes, the recessive form, having two copies of it, you might say, well, you'll end up with blue eyes, for example, in the case of human eyeballs. But in the case of something more significant to a plant or animal, the two failed genes are actually lethal, and so the plant won't survive. So this is what we see in these strange mutant forms of plants, this inability to be passed through the germline into another seed. But the wonder of plants is you can reproduce them asexually by cuttings and graftings.
You mentioned grafting. Suppose I have hawthorns and one tends to bloom very early. And if I take another one that blooms very late, and I graft the later one onto the first one, would I get a hybrid that will produce both? Or will the genetics of one take over from the other? What would happen?
You would get two things potentially happening. One would be the genetics would hold true in the two branches. However, depending on the trigger for the age of flowering or the date of flowering, this can be hormonal. And so there will be an influence exerted by one form on the other. So potentially all sorts of strange things might happen. But we do know that genetically plants have a predisposition to flower at a particular moment in the year. So in the past, historically, we have often imported plants from tree nurseries on the continent, particularly Holland, the Netherlands. And these plants have got a genetic predisposition to flower a bit earlier because spring comes earlier in southern Europe and it proceeds like a great wave up towards the northern parts of Europe. So introducing this different genetic lineage of species still found in Ireland and in the continent, we have the risk of imported material flowering too soon for the pollinators to be at work. So it's a consequence of these moves that have big potential to upset ecosystems because the pollinating insects, the insects that depend upon the moment leaves appear on trees, they're all timed in nature to work in synchrony. And therefore, putting in different genetic stock can throw these timings out.
It seems to me, looking at the wonderful white hedges around here now with the maybush, and the lovely smell you get up close, that hawthorn is overdoing it a bit. There's an overkill. It seems to go to great lengths to get pollinated. And it seems impossible that there could be enough insects to get around to even the tiniest fraction of the flowers that are there. Is this a reflection of a decline in insects or something like that? Or is it a statistical thing where you've got to have thousands of flowers just to get one or two pollinated?
The big risk to any flowering tree is the lack of pollinators from bad weather. So if you've got rainy, cold, windy conditions, a lot of these pollinators will not be out and about. And that is why you will see the hawthorn has a succession of flowers. It's opening new flowers every day. They last 3 to 4 days, and it will flower for up to a month. And during that time, pollinators will be in abundance and they may disappear during bad weather. But at the end of the season, a thorn tree will sometimes be absolutely covered. The whole tree looks reddish from a distance because of the abundance of fruit on it. And a thorn tree in full fruit is a fabulous sight to behold. So a good season, if you have a whole month of good pollination going on, the wretched tree actually has a job to grow so many fruits, but it will do it and it will produce a massive crop.
Niall.
The hawthorn, or the white thorn, as many people in Ireland would know it, is one of the most important plants that we have for biodiversity, for birds and for insects especially. So as Matthew said there, it has this amazing berry crop, and that's very important for the birds because the plant will hold those berries sometimes for several months, which means there's a steady food supply for many of the birds at a time of year when it's a lot harder for them to find other food. At this time of year, of course, although the white thorn is flowering, it's also the time of year when we have lots of birds nesting in it. And it makes a great nesting habitat for a wide variety of species because it's so impenetrable to predators. So things like sparrowhawks and foxes and cats, they can't get through those prickles. And so the birds are nice and secure inside there. And of course, as well, what's happening is we have all of those insects around it. A hawthorn plant will support up to 150 different species of insect here. So that's one of the big advantages of our native plants. Our native insects have evolved alongside them. And so you have this abundance of insect life around them. And of course, those insects and their larvae, in turn, they become bird food. We also know that hawthorn hedges, particularly, they're sought out by predators such as barn owls. They actually seek them out because they know that they're going to be little rodents, little mice and shrews as well, which another type of animal, not a rodent. They be hiding underneath there, and they use them as conduits to get from A to B. So a really vital plant, a very important part of the Irish landscape, and one that, you know, I think we'd be hard pressed to do without here in Ireland from a biodiversity point of view. It really is that important.
One of the striking features in May is the appearance of the thorn, and this year is an example of quite a late spring, and the thorn tree is able to time its flowering at the appropriate weather conditions, so it's going to bring out its blooms just at the right moment of a lot of these insects hatching, the birds nesting, and it is a wonderful indicator, if you like, of how the natural ecosystem times itself depending on whether the spring is early or late. And the smell that Richard was talking about earlier, it is very overpowering at times, almost a sickly sweet smell. But you can see how that is going to be really attractive to bring in the pollinators.